Tristan, I've mentioned this before, but if our podcast had an arch nemesis, it would be Eric Von Daniken.
I thought it was John Carpenter, but okay.
That is true. Also, close second. But I bring this up just because, I don't know, I feel like we mention him a lot in a lot of episodes. And is there like, could we possibly do one episode where we just don't mention Eric Von Daniken at all? I mean, excluding this part where I'm saying that let's not talk about him.
This is like writing an essay without using the letter E.
Why? What's our topic today?
So today we're starting a little sub-series, a podcast within a podcast, if you will, where we're going to profile some of these ancient astronaut dudes. And I have eight pages of notes about Eric Von Daniken to talk about.
Oh, man. What a bad time to come up with this rule about not mentioning Eric Von Daniken.
Aw, beans.
Maybe next time. Actually, I have no idea. We played around with the idea of potentially this being a multi-part series. So who knows? I have no idea what's happening. But, you know, I'm interested. Ever since we started this podcast, we teased this idea of doing these sort of, spotlights on some of the big names in ancient aliens and ancient astronaut theory. And people have really latched onto this idea and they've been wanting us to get into it. And it's only taken us about 32 episodes to start. And who better to start with than the father of it all? I was going to call him the daddy of it all, but I did not want to reference Eric Von Daniken as a daddy. No, thank you.
Yeah. Ruin me. Fake history, daddy.
Fake history, daddy.
So we're talking about the big, by the way, it's probably not aliens, a podcast about ancient aliens and response to ancient astronaut theories and the show Ancient Aliens and pseudo-archaeology and ufology. And, this elevator pitch is getting more and more floors as we speak. But
I know. Now we're on to biographies.
Yeah. So I think this is a good one to talk about. We'll kind of get into a few more profiles as this series goes along. I definitely have one about David Icke that I would very much like to do at some point.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, Eric Von Daniken and the ancient, he's not the person who invented ancient astronaut theory, which we'll get into a bit later, but he's almost synonymous with the term. And
yes,
he popularized it to the extent that he might, especially in the English speaking world, that he might as well be the father of ancient astronaut theory.
And even though he's the most well-known name in that field, he is not the most well-known name on this podcast because we have names as well.
Oh, yes.
Hi, how's it going? I am your co-host, I suppose, Scott Nicewander. My job is to really just show up and learn and ask questions. And other than that, I know nothing.
And I am Scott's co-host, Tristan Johnson, who does the frantic reading to answer these questions, to just settle all of my history nitpicks in a row.
And I'm excited to learn. I actually really love, I mean, you know this about me and obviously about you. You have a YouTube channel about history. I have a YouTube channel that talks a lot about history, even if it's not dedicated specifically to history. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I have, I'm very interested, I'm very fascinated by history. And so, especially history about specific people. So I'm really excited about this episode.
Oh boy, yeah, we got a real humdinger of an episode today. So yeah, as I mentioned, we're talking about Eric Von Daniken, the big guy who you probably, if you are coming to this podcast having watched episodes of Ancient Aliens, he's interviewed in nearly every episode, at least in the early episodes. But almost every major ancient alien theory has either been written by, or at least claimed to have been written by, or plagiarized by, or wholly fabricated by Eric Von Daniken. He's at least in its vein. He's had such a huge impact in the realm of pseudoscience and pseudo history and pseudo archaeology that there are actually, like, I was reading this book to talk about this, and that in the 80s there was this period where there was this like acceptance that like pseudo history and pseudo archaeology is going to become the mainstream idea of what we think of when we think of the past. It's going to supplant actual history and actual archaeology just because Eric von Däniken and company were just getting so popular that it was just going to outshine so that the popular conception of like all these things was going to be the ancient astronaut theory on it. So
that's why. Am I misunderstanding what the prefix pseudo is? Because in my head, pseudo always meant like not real. So the fact
means
that
means fake.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just weird. That's what I figured. So it's just weird to hear like, yeah, pseudo archaeology is going to take over the mainstream, knowing that pseudo archaeology means like fake archaeology. I wouldn't know if that's a good thing, Tristan.
No, it's not. The person who was saying that was lamenting it.
Okay, they were. Yes, that makes more sense to me now. Okay, that's good. I don't want that to happen either.
Yeah, no one does. But yeah, Eric von Däniken, interesting person, has a kind of twisting, turning story about how he became a mega famous author of made up history, and also a long list of crimes.
Fun.
And claims about, you know, maybe whether or not he actually wrote some of the things that he says, and all sorts of, it goes all sorts of fun places. But yeah, let's talk about Eric.
Now let's establish some ground rules here. Are we gonna tackle this from an unbiased, totally neutral standpoint, or are we just going to let our disdain for Eric von Däniken fly a little bit here in this episode?
I will reserve my judgment for all of the damage that he has done to history and archaeology and the public understanding of the past for the end.
Okay.
But I will talk rather neutrally about his life story up until then. But yeah, I definitely think that we will have some hostile leaning riffs because
I think I'm gonna try my best to be neutral and non-judgmental. All right, so with that in mind, let's learn a little bit about Eric von Däniken.
Sure. So yeah, as you know, Eric von Däniken has been written as possibly the most famous advocate of the existence of ancient astronauts, that they brought civilization to humanity and even mated with primitive humans to produce truly modern intelligent beings, i.e. us. That's his claim to fame.
I'm following so far.
Our story of Eric von Däniken starts where a lot of horrible stories start, in Switzerland.
Switzerland!
Until you return all of that Nazi gold, I'm going to make Switzerland jokes. It's fine.
You know, I had already decided that I was the very first thing you were going to say, I was going to let my guard of neutrality down and be like, oh, not that. Anything but that. That sucks. But then you just said Switzerland. And I was like, you know what? That's working for me. Mm-hmm. Switzerland. Oh, man.
My great grandfather was from Switzerland, so I think I'm allowed to do this. I don't know. I have to stop leaning on that because my ethnic pie chart is far too mixed up for me to just like be able to claim everything. But
that's fair.
But yeah, Eric von Däniken was born in 1935 in a city called Zofingen in Switzerland.
Sure.
And he grew up as the son of committed, dedicated Roman Catholics, as you do in Switzerland.
Uh-huh.
And he spent his childhood learning at a Catholic boarding school called the School of St. Michel at Freiburg.
But soon he would transfer to the School of Hard Knocks. Right?
I mean, he was reportedly a very... Okay, let me just hear this. Let me just like read this through and see if this makes us both as ADHD people feel like maybe there's some kinship here.
Okay, yeah.
He apparently was, quote, a nonconformist as well as a, quote, disinterested student who had poor grades and behavior problems.
Everything you're saying right now sounds really familiar.
So he was already like, you know, a bit all over the place, which, you know, honestly, you know, mood.
Yeah.
But he did not just have trouble with his Catholic school. He was also a member of the Boy Scouts, and they also had some issues with him, but not really to do with his, well, I guess it was to do with his behavior, but not like, you know, acting out or, you know, being hyper or whatever, but more in the embezzling money aspect.
Ah.
So he was already off to a good start. He was actually apparently investigated by a local magistrate for possibly stealing from the local Boy Scouts treasury.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Getting in early, Eric.
Mm-hmm. And he went to this school until he was about, 18 years old or 19 years old. Mm-hmm. In 1954, he left and he went to Bern, which is a big city in Switzerland, and went to go work as a bartender in a hotel.
Ah, rad.
Yeah. So far, so good. Acting out, possibly stealing from the Boy Scouts. We're off to, getting a job as a bartender.
Yeah, there's some ups and downs. There's some very normal stuff and then some very I don't know about that one. But otherwise, this feels unremarkable in a lot of ways so far.
I like bartending. I have a bartending license. I respect that drip. But unfortunately, he couldn't keep doing a normal thing like being a bartender, which is a cool and respectable profession.
Absolutely.
Instead, he took an interest in archaeology. So he would save up all of his bartending money and go on trips around the world to find ancient sites. That was his hobby. Again, same. I love that idea. As someone who in 2011, at the age of 23, went to Mexico City with no money on my own.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with wanting to travel and see the world and see the cool places.
Mm-hmm. In 1960, he met Elizabeth, who he married, and he is still married to today. They're still together.
So that's sweet.
Yeah. And apparently they had this very sweet gig where they worked together in hotels and restaurants all around Switzerland. So far, sounds pretty based. Pretty good life so far.
Honestly, pretty normal. Why are we even talking about this guy?
Well, the thing is, the old Boy Scout itch started coming back because Von Daniken seemed to have issues, as the book that I found about him so eloquently wrote. He seemed to have trouble distinguishing between his money and other people's money, which makes sense. It's just going on all of those trips on a bartender salary. I got to tell you, bartending is fun. It is not profitable.
So starting to get a little sticky fingers. What are we talking about here?
Yeah. So he had various charges and convictions for both fraud and petty theft, which had resulted in him receiving multiple fines and spending a bunch of time in prison. Swiss prison.
Eric, you're better than this. Come on.
He also took an interest in ufology in this period. He believed that extraterrestrials, he was getting into UFO stuff. Keep in mind that this is the 50s, 60s.
Okay.
And Roswell was about the beginning of the UFO craze. So he was definitely walking in during that period.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I was going to say, what was the specific reason for his sudden interest? And then, that makes a lot of sense. A big potential alien spaceship crash cover up. Ooh, very interesting indeed. So if he's got these two, I'm just going to guess, take a little guess here. If he's got these two little hobbies and interests of both history and UFOs, I'm sure at some point they would collide together in some unfortunate ways.
Yeah. So he started to travel the world and he started to think about this possibility that ancient astronauts had visited Earth sometime in prehistory. Apparently, he was inspired by this by a visit to Mexico in which he saw the ruins at Palenque, which, if you remember from a previous episode, is the whole thing about King Pakal and the rocket ship.
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah.
So he went and saw that, and that apparently was the thing that inspired him to go down this rabbit hole of looking into all of these things and claiming that they were aliens.
Gotcha.
What's interesting, though, is that he's not the first person to have done this, and in the sort of burgeoning field of ufology that was growing in the 1960s, the ancient astronaut theory was kind of marginalized in UFO circles because they thought that it was too unscientific and sensationalistic.
What?
And that it would bring the serious study of UFOs into disrepute.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't that they were saying aliens are too out there and too wild. They were just saying, come on, we want to actually study UFOs and not make this wild, outrageous of claims.
Yeah, exactly. And von Däniken completely 180'd this position in the UFO circles.
Was not listening to it. No.
Mm-hmm. So we got the 1960s in between bouts of going to prison for fraud and theft.
Uh-huh.
Von Däniken starts piecing together all of these, you know, esoteric theories about all this ancient astronaut stuff. And he starts writing his first book.
Uh-huh.
Possibly one that is on my desk right now that I'm looking at.
Oh, no.
And so in 1966, he wrote this book and started submitting it to different publishing houses. Apparently, 22 rejections later, he was a little bit dismayed. But in 1967, he approached a person by the name of Thomas von Rando, who was the science editor of a weekly magazine or newspaper called Die Zeit, to see if they would publish his magazine or publish his, instead of publishing it as a book, publishing it as a series of articles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember I came across this in my research that we did for the video that we did about the Eternals and Eric von Däniken. Yeah.
So von Rando apparently took this book and looked it over and thought that, no, this is not suitable for a newspaper. But that it did need to be a book. Like, he's like, this shouldn't go in my publication, but you should definitely get this published somewhere. So von Rando apparently called a guy by the name of Edwin Barth von Vernalp, who was the head of an organization or a company called Econ Publishing, which is one of the presses that had already turned down one of von Däniken's manuscript. He made that call and basically told von Vernalp that he should meet with von Däniken.
There's a
so
lot
we got
of
von Rando, von Vernalp, and von Däniken.
I was going to say there's a lot of Vons happening in this story.
It's like the German version of like somebody with a French name starting with de. Means like of something, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I do, you know, subject matter aside, there is something sort of delightful about von Däniken getting 22 rejections and then like going to someone else and being like, look, I've been trying to get this as a book. I understand it's not going to be a book. Could you maybe just like split it up and put it in these other, and the, you know, publish it as like a serialized thing? I don't know, man. I just need something. And then that person just like, no, it must be a book. Like, subject matter aside, if it was any other book, that would be like a triumphant, it would be heartfelt. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, this book sucks ass.
Yeah, so that's the thing, is that von Däniken's story is in many ways like a dark success story.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't really had much of a comeuppance quite yet. So what happened is that they agreed to meet for lunch.
All the Vons, yeah.
Yeah, specifically von Vernalp and von Däniken would meet for lunch. And gotcha. Apparently, von Däniken is a very charismatic guy, because by the end of lunch, he agreed that Econ was going to buy his book and publish about 6,000 copies by the time lunch was over. So very, very, very...
I mean, yeah. His charisma is not in question. Like, even in the episodes of the show he's on, like, you can tell he's really into what he's talking about. It's the charisma's not the problem. It's the knowledge and the the everything else.
Reportedly afterwards, then they sent it to a guy by the name of Wilhelm Rogersdorf, who is a screenwriter who apparently might have like significantly rewrote the book.
Really?
Yeah, this is something that's a little bit like, you know, rumor and hearsay, but apparently von Däniken maybe had interesting ideas, but wasn't exactly the strongest writer. And so once he like got sold on the ideas, they're like, all right, I'm going to bring in the editor. And this editor apparently like went to town on this book.
Oh.
What came out of the process was a book by the name of Ehrenrungen an die Zukunft. We're going to get some German listeners who are going to just...
I think that was perfect.
Ehrenrungen an die Zukunft. Okay. Something in there. Somewhere in that. But apparently this roughly translates to memories of the future.
That's really poetic, honestly. I bet it would be even more poetic if we had a proper German pronunciation. Was it Swiss? German?
Swiss, yeah. Switzerland, they speak like Italian, French, German, and a indigenous language called Romansch.
Okay.
But it sounds like this is all German.
It sounds like this is all German. I bet it would be even better in a native German's tongue.
Probably. So apparently von Däniken had a very different idea of what this book was, like, the thesis of what this book was supposed to be, in opposition to, like, what actually came out. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it was supposed to speculate on all these things in order to inspire people, like, basically to inspire space exploration. Because, you know, it was the 60s, and space was becoming, like, this big thing. And so he wrote all about, like, oh, look, all this, like, possibility that ancient astronauts came. Shouldn't this inspire us to, like, go into space and do more space exploration? And he was saying that, like, because, like, you know, we are the children of aliens, that our destiny is also to go out to the stars.
Oh.
Yeah. So, like, that our imperative should be to return and find our progenitors.
It's we're to the idea of memories of the future is, like, you know, we're discovering that aliens visited humanity, and thus we must go out into the stars as well as they did once upon a time. Yeah, again, it's poetic. I don't hate it. I think it's lovely. Just the idea of it, let alone, I mean, I do not care for the actual book. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though, and this actually plays very much into your only context, no content policy.
Yeah, something
which
like
is
that.
He released this book in 1968. 1968, you did not need to sell people on space flight or on, like, our destiny being in the stars. It was the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
The space race was at its maximum heat. We were a year from landing somebody
on the moon. Yeah.
So, like, what happened was is that this book comes out with this thesis that, you know, humanity should go to the stars. People don't particularly, you know, like, that doesn't really move them because everyone's already sold on space flight.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, man, duh.
But the ancient alien stuff really captured their imaginations. Mm. And that is what really people latched onto. And so this book would go on to become a really huge bestseller. And I'm going to go into what happened to Von Daniken after the release of Memories of the Future, as I'm going to call it.
Fantastic. I'm excited to hear about
it. But first, we need to get our own, like Von Daniken, we also need to get money from other people. So products and services.
We're going to go steal a whole bunch of money. Be right back.
Oh, man, I stole me a golden turlet.
I only stole me a spare piece of drywall. That wasn't a very helpful thrift at all.
I gotta tell you, I gotta put a story in this. So I'm currently playing in a Dungeons and Dragons campaign where we're doing, like, Curse of Strahd, and we're, like, in this castle to save this person who's gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, this person could be dead. We have no idea where they are. This is an emergency. No. We need to be rushing as fast as possible. We spent the first, like, 50 minutes to an hour of our last session we found some chests full of coins and just trying to see how much of it we could just stuff into our backpacks as possible.
Uh-huh.
Just how much of it we could just cram and still be able to walk. And then we're like, all right, now that we have, like, including, like, 50,000 pennies, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, okay, like, how do we fit 50,000 pennies in our backpack? And, like, what are we doing? Are we supposed to be saving a person? Oh, right. Yeah, let's go do that.
And that's how much money we made on that ad break. 50,000 mm-hmm. pennies.
Yep. Approximately 500 gold. So back to Eric Von Daniken.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we do.
We could talk about D&D for the rest of the episode.
That's a different podcast. Although I smell like a holiday special of an ancient astronaut themed D&D one shot.
That sounds like something. Oh, that would be fun. Hey, if you want to see that, go follow us on Twitter at @probsnotaliens. And
there you go.
All right, let's talk about Eric Von Daniken, I guess.
So Eric Von Daniken was not the first person to write about ancient astronauts, but he definitely flung it into fame. As it said, a combination of good timing and an emerging hunger for these kinds of ideas.
Yeah.
There was a really big interest in space. There was a really big interest in UFOs. There was a really big interest in, like, you know, like a kind of, like, alternative, like, you know, kind of spiritually stuff.
Yeah.
All that stuff was kind of coming together at one time. And then this book comes out that's like, I figured out how to make chocolate, peanut butter, and a third thing.
Yeah. We've mixed this other thing together. we've mixed all of these ideas that you are craving. This is an incredibly craveable book, and mm-hmm. I've got all the things that you need inside of here. Just read it.
In the 1960s, traditional religion was starting to suffer, and a lot of young people were no longer part of like the traditional church. And so a lot of disillusioned people started to see ancient astronaut theory as sort of a new kind of religion. It was, suited to a time period where we were, where we were moving away from, tradition and religion and moving towards things that sounded scientific and historical.
But still trying to find some sort of spirituality in the scientific,
Yeah. And I will say that this book sounds like it's history and sounds like it's scientific, even if it's all, fake and wrong, but it kind of fits that like vein. And if you are kind of in the process of leaving religion, this is a thing to sort of fill that religion shaped hole with something that sounds believable.
Yeah. And it even sounds, it feels a little spiritual as well as you're talking about, other ancient civilizations that may have worshipped aliens as gods. And what does that mean for you? And what does that mean for us as humanity? And I don't know. There's big questions in there about humanity and about our place in the universe. And it ticks all of these boxes that makes you, that just like fits perfectly into this little piece of time that everyone's interested in all of these ideas.
Now, this is from a book called Invented History or Invented Knowledge. Sorry. So there's this connection. I don't think I can make myself think it's the author, but I want to put it out there because this sort of like pseudo religion popping up around ancient astronauts theory, even if it has no basis in fact, didn't deter that in this period, possibly inspired by this, a whole bunch of UFO or ancient alien cults started to pop up. Probably the most famous ones you would know about are Heaven's Gate. Are you familiar with Heaven's Gate?
It sounds familiar. I'm not really up to date on my cults.
So Heaven's Gate was I remember this is like one of those because I was like a child when this happened. It's one of the primordial child memories that you only half remember. But it was a cult that basically believed, it was a UFO cult that believed, that a UFO is going to come by and basically beam up their souls. And in 1995, I want to say, they committed mass suicide. And what was really the thing that everyone remembers is that like they all wore this same like Nike shoes and these like track suits. And there was like this footage that I can I can see clear as day in my head of like people walking through the house and everybody's like lying in like these bunk beds and they're covered with blankets and you can just see their feet sticking out and like they're all dead. Oh. It was Heaven's Gate and the fact that like because of their host, Heaven's Gate's website is still up and it like looks like 1995 still.
Well, most of that story was grim, but I do love old websites.
But Heaven's Gate reportedly has inspiration from, Von Daniken's theories. Another one that is probably more common and a little bit less it's also sad and very, very dark, which is also the Church of Scientology.
Oh, come on.
Probably the most successful ancient alien cult to have sprung up by a very Von Daniken-esque figure in L. Ron Hubbard.
Do we need to do an episode about the Church of Scientology?
I mean, that would be really fun. L. Ron Hubbard definitely, and Scientology is quite a bit, but there's also a really great Behind the Bastards two-parter on L. Ron Hubbard that I would probably say is way better, but Scientology and the Scientology ancient astronaut claims. I mean, that's always something fun to do. Let us know if you want our particular spin on it. But most people read Von Daniken because they liked it sort of had this quirky and offbeat, description of artifacts and events from ancient times. And it was so much more fun to read than, conventional archaeology. Because like one of the things that kind of stuck out is this is before like a lot of like public facing academics was like not less of a thing back then. Mm-hmm. And so this was talking about history and archaeology in an accessible way that was, fun and really, really tuned for public consumption when a lot of archaeology was just dry, dense science stuff, right?
Would you say that talking about history in a fun and accessible way is also how you would describe the YouTube channel Step Back.
It is. And to the point where that there was a time where when I applied for my PhD, my like letter of intent was very much about this being the goal that I want to do with my life. But yeah, Step Back. Oh, great channel.
Yeah.
Very big fan.
Amazing. I mean, yeah, it's important. It's important to be able to talk, to teach people about history and these really important and interesting subjects in a way that is interesting and really is engaging. And it just sucks that the person who is able to do that so effectively is someone who got it so wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when this book did gangbusters in German and it got translated to a bunch of languages, and where it really, really went wild is when it was translated in English under the title Chariots of the Gods.
There it is. We said it.
Yeah, it was a bestseller. It was translated into English, appearing in Britain in 1969 and the United States in 1970. And oh boy, everyone loved it. It was written in a conversational style that makes for, like, you know, very enjoyable reading. And it was very easy to suspend disbelief while reading it. And it took off, selling millions of copies to the point where by December of the year that it was released, it had become the best-selling book in West Germany.
That's amazing. I'm like trying to like go back to being neutral about Eric von Daniken for a second and just be like, wow, good job, Eric. You did it.
We love a success story.
I was going to say we love a girl boss. Oh my God. Not who Eric von Daniken is. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
My brain is rotten on the internet.
It took off. It got translated in a bunch of languages after that. There was a television documentary based on it. There was even a theatrical film, which he reportedly got mad at because, like, they sold the rights to the book to make it into a movie, but then the movie turned out to be like basically like a science fiction movie, and Eric von Daniken wasn't a fan of that. He was like, no, this is real.
No, that's like when you take the Da Vinci Code and you make it a fictional movie. That's not fun.
There's an episode in the future of me just ripping on, like, I'll do it. I'll do, like, I have read, I think, two of the Dan Brown, like, pseudo history novels.
Yeah.
Followed by, and I think I actually, like, the third one, the one that is took place in Washington, D.C., I literally could not finish. It was so, like, it was just driving me nuts. And, like, I know it's fiction and it's fine.
Yeah.
But then, like, they started doing stuff like, you know, Da Vinci Code tours and stuff like that in Europe. And I was like, people believe this shit. I hate it.
Well, I mean, look, we're only partly through this episode so far and I'm loving it. So I suspect more biography episodes are on the horizon in some capacity.
Yeah. So in the Dan Brown sense, chapter 423, moving on to the next thing. So obviously Chariots was a mega hit and people wanted more von Daniken, more Ancient Aliens, more. And von Daniken was ready to give it to them.
Not slowing down for anyone.
Yeah, he has been able to write, I think at this point, over 30 books about ancient astronaut theory. Although many people will point out that a lot of his books, especially his most like recent books, are more just reshufflings and rewrites of Chariots of the Gods.
I was going to ask.
Gives me quite a vibe for Ancient Aliens, because Ancient Aliens also feels like it's constantly rewriting and just like, you know, rephrasing itself as we move on.
Yep. How many seasons can we get out of the same dozen theories? Mm-hmm. Yeah. At some point, you got to run. I mean, you're a historian. You can tell me I'm way off base here, but it's some point you just run out of history, right? Like at some point the Call of Duty video games had to move away from World War II, you know?
Yeah. I mean, unless you want to just go the history route, which is just finding ever new ways to look at the same evidence and, you know, all sorts of wacky ways. So like you could do it, but like the fact is, like, apparently I have not read the 30 plus repertoire of von Daniken, but it sounds like it's a lot of just reshuffling and rewriting the same thing without adding new analysis or new content or anything like that.
Doesn't sound like he's breaking new ground.
No. So there's a lot of thought that a lot of von Daniken's like later works are very repetitive and derivative. So 1970s, you know, or like this week, like von Daniken was on top of the world. Everything was going great.
Oh yeah.
But then they started to get approached by another big fan of his work. And that was Interpol, who had some questions about
the Boy Scout. Was it the Boy Scout stuff that he
was getting? This is much bigger than the Boy Scout stuff. Okay. So it turns out that he didn't pay some taxes for his business. And then as Interpol started to look more into his activities, they turned out that he had probably about 350,000 British pounds worth of personal debt, which is equivalent to, this is in 1968, by the way, which is equivalent to about 750,000 American dollars.
American dollars in 1968 or today?
Yeah, in 1968.
Oh, no. I'm gonna go to inflation calculator real quick because I need to know what that means today. Oh, do you want to guess? Do you want to take a good guess?
I'm going to say about 2.5 million.
Oh, it is over $6 million.
Oh my God.
$6 million. Also, inflation is so bad.
Yeah. Oh man. So he was arrested, put in front of a court that found him guilty, and he was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison along with a fine. But luckily, at the same time, his book was a bestseller around the world, so he was just raking in those royalty checks. And by the time he was out of prison, he had already paid off all of his fines and all of his debts
because of the book did so good.
Yeah. So can you imagine like making your most viral video ever and then being put in prison and you have to like sit in prison while like that you could just like see on the dashboard that 1 of 10 showing crazier and crazier numbers. A very insider YouTube reference. And he did try to get his conviction nullified, which was unsuccessful, but he did not have to serve his full sentence. Some people, I'm not saying us, but some people might think that this is a sign that Von Daniken might not be the most honest or person of integrity.
That
might cast some doubt on his works that claim to be about facts and analysis and stuff.
They're saying his big amounts of debt, it makes him look sort of like a grifter, a little swindler sort of a guy.
Just a little bit. A little bit.
Okay. That is certainly one. I won't argue with that. That's certainly one way you could look at it. I would say all the things he got wrong also prove that he's not knowledgeable.
There's that too. He also started to run afoul of the church. And so German churches started openly criticizing him in the media because they thought that he was trying to replace God and because of all the stuff about the Bible, replacing God and angels with aliens.
They're probably not a big fan of Von Daniken then. Yeah.
No. So that led to an interesting thing of him going to prison around the time that these churches were criticizing him. Mm-hmm. So there's a conspiracy theory that Daniken's legal problems were trumped up because the clergy basically it was like a setup by the church.
They got him. They got him. Stop talking about angels and gods and things like that. Get out of here. We don't like you.
So despite the fact that he has a long history of this kind of behavior, there's a lot of people who thought that he was set up. And so he was able to play the martyr.
Oh my God, that's so annoying.
Also during the 1970s, and you can imagine, because we've talked about this in our, I think it was like the third or fourth episode of this show, about what kind of damage this caused. In the 1970s, they translated the book into Bengali, and it became a huge mega seller in India. I'm sure that that's not going to have any effect on right-wing Indian nationalism at all.
Oops.
In 1978, he also became the subject of a documentary called The Case of the Ancient Astronauts, which was done by Nova. And it was basically a thorough debunking of all of his ideas and pointing out all of his fabrication, all of his fabricated evidence.
Oh, wait. So The Case of the Ancient Astronauts was not, it was not a case for the ancient astronauts.
No.
It was against it fully.
So Ancient Aliens is based on a book that was debunked in 1978.
Great.
Yeah. So all of these things together led to him kind of having a loss of popularity. He had a difficult time finding a publisher for any of his new books. And for a while, he wrote his 10th book in 1982 called The Gods and Their Grand Design. And it was his last book to appear in English for a long period of time. He couldn't get English translators for his work. Although, even though he couldn't get books published in English, he was still writing books in German. And between 1983 and 1994, he published 11 books.
Oh my, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Tristan, what am I doing? I'm sitting here like, oh, I've only made 2 videos this year. He made 11 books in as many years, I think.
Yeah, he's basically clipping out a book a year. In 1996, he wrote a book called Eyes of the Sphinx and managed to have that translated into English. So he was starting to come back because something interesting was going on in the 90s in the realm of UFOs and interest. So on the 10th of September, 1993, a little TV show on Fox started to take America by storm. A little show called The X-Files.
The show that our theme song is a ripoff of?
Yeah.
Amazing.
So The X-Files became like a mega hit in America and around the world. And wouldn't you believe it that sparked people's interest in Eric Von Daniken again. And he had a sort of second life. Not second life, like the place where people go to have sex on the internet or something. Yeah. But like a second...
Also popular in 1993?
That's probably early for them. Yeah. It looks like it's from 1993, but no.
It sure does.
I have nothing against second life. You know, you do you.
I don't know anything about it. I know very little about it.
So The X-Files comes out, huge thing. And sort of like rebrings back. Wow. That's like when I said once to my wife, I was like, I need to pull out some chicken. We need to de-thaw it tomorrow. And I was like, wait a minute. That's not how that works.
I need to de-thaw the chicken. Refreeze it. That's funny. X-Files comes out. Eric Von Daniken making waves again.
But here's the thing. The X-Files also in the show had a bunch of different paranormal stuff happen in the show. But one of them was that there were alien visitations in the ancient past. So ancient astronaut theory actually like played a role in the plot of the X-Files. I don't know, because I was watching it with my dad and this is 1993, so I would have been 4 years old, and I found that show very scary. So I
felt the same way. This is just like a, you might not know this, maybe you do. Do we know if X-Files affected anything else outside, in a similar way outside of this? Like, I'm sure people started believing in aliens more in general, like, or if they did other like episodes about, I don't know, lizard people or Bigfoot or whatever. Did like those episodes also spark interest in, you know, that sort of stuff?
That's a question I would very much like to answer. I don't know the answer, but I do know that it did lead to a growth in revitalization of interest in UFOs and stuff. We kind of talked about this in like the Roswell thing. Remember, like, how this is also around the time that like the alien autopsy stuff started coming out, and like the Unsolved Mysteries episode on Roswell.
Right.
And so like in the 90s, there was this big resurgence in interests in UFOs. Furthermore, and I'm only saying this because it's really kind of veering into the content of my next video, but it also was a time of a growing conspiracy theory mindset in America. This was the time of major standoffs at places like Ruby Ridge and Waco, which was leading to these groups of like militia people who were very much tied into this idea that the federal government was like, you know, evil and doing all these conspiracies. And I mean, that ultimately led to the Oklahoma City bombing, which is what my video is about. But so like there was like a bunch of stuff going on. I kind of talked about this off camera or off mic with you at one point about how this is why I think that Men in Black is like the 90s movie, because it hits on two things that were really, really big in American paranoia at that time, which is like illegal immigrants and aliens. And that the first scene, the opening scene in Men in Black, is literally them stopping a group of of immigrants coming across the American southern border. And then they're like, "Ha, we're going to stop you." And then you're like, "Oh, this is like kind of like, you know, this is an illegal immigrant thing." And then they're like, "Everyone move aside. We're going for that guy who's the alien." And it's like, that's the whole, that was the whole joke. We as kids didn't realize they were doing the racism.
And now look at Will Smith. Where's he at now?
I'm surprised that story still has legs. I thought that was one of those stories that people would have forgotten like 12 hours after it was over, but no, it's
still
going. I'm
sure by the time I'm up, I'm editing this episode.
Another thing too came out in the sort of same time, probably riding on that same popularity, was this little Kevin Bacon film called Stargate.
Oh, we've gotten requests to watch this and make an episode about it.
Yeah, it was weird because I'm like a huge science fiction fan, but I've seen Stargate the movie, but I haven't watched any of the like many TV show spinoffs, and so I probably should at some point. But the movie Stargate, the plot of it is about the discovery of a alien artifact in ancient Egyptian ruins.
Yeah, that makes sense why we've been asked to do an episode about it.
Yeah, because like ancient aliens basically, or ancient astronaut theory basically is the premise of Stargate, that like
makes sense.
There is like a portal, like that there's portals between worlds that are like basically based in, you know, in that ancient Egypt was aliens. Yeah. And that, yeah, the mythology of the gods of ancient Egypt were actually like these parasite aliens. The movie actually didn't do super great, but in 1997, they made a TV show called Stargate SG-1, which had tons and tons, like, you know, it was on the air forever. And then they did a spinoff series called Stargate Atlantis, which ran from 2004 to 2009. And I'm hearing scuttlebutt that they're trying to bring Stargate back yet again. And one of my good friends, Mia Mulder, is a huge fan of Stargate, and she says it's very good, and so I probably should watch it.
I'll watch it. Yeah, we'll do a whole additional podcast where we watch Stargate episode by episode.
No, man. The other thing too is that there was a movie called Stargate: The Ark of Truth, which was a movie based on the TV shows, and it was a 2008 direct to DVD release. one of those great ones. So think about. So you're riding high. Things are going great. 90s are going great for Eric von Daniken. What is the next step after you write a bunch of hit books? What would you do next?
What would I do? So I wrote a bunch of hit books. I got all the money in the world, but I imagine. And if not, I can always steal some work. I'm Eric von Daniken. But what I would do is probably settle down, say that I have enough, say that I'm done with my thing, with my grift, with my, you know, maybe just do some stuff for me. You know what I mean?
Incorrect. The answer is start a theme park.
Oh, yeah. That actually makes way more sense than what I was saying.
Yeah. In the Swiss city of Interlaken, he started a place called Mystery Park in 2003. One ticket cost $38 to get in. And
wow, that's nice. I mean, compared to Disney, that's not bad.
And von Daniken, apparently this park went really, Mystery Park was just extremely popular, competing with all of the various wonderful things that you can do as a tourist in Switzerland, which is a lot. This podcast brought to you by the Tourism Council of Switzerland. So the park did so well that it opened in 2003 and closed in 2006. So it didn't even last the entire time I was in high school.
I did also run this through the inflation calculator. Not a big difference as last time. It was about $60 today.
There you go.
Which is not as fun as the other thing that I said earlier.
Now, the book that I got a lot of this from, it came out in 2009. So the way that it ends, it's like von Daniken continues to write to this day. And his like latest book came out in 2009. And it looks like his career is really on the down, like is really on the downward slope. And I'm like, they don't know what's coming.
But we know
that. Yeah, we know that he's kept going. His latest book is called. All right, let's get this one. This is a mouthful. Confessions of an Egyptologist, Lost Libraries, Vanished Labyrinths, and The Astounding Truth Under the Saqqara Pyramids, which came out in 2021. So he's still at it. And now because of the popularity of Ancient Aliens on the History Channel, he's riding high. Now, I think Ancient Aliens might be past its, you know, its peak popularity wise.
Probably.
But I think that he's still, you know, he's pretty old at this point. Like he's coming up on, I think he's like He's in this, he's almost 90. So like, you know, he's up there, but he's still at it. He's been at this game for over 50 years now.
Goodness. Well done, Eric. I mean, not really well. Everything you've done is not well done, but you know, good on you for keeping it going, I guess. Why am I like being on his side more than not? I don't know what's happening.
I don't know. But in part two, we'll do a little bit on how he keeps thinking of all of these original ideas.
Yeah. All right. So we know that his career did not end in 2009. It continues on to this day. And we'll learn more about that next time, I suppose. Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of It's Probably Not Aliens. Follow us on Twitter at @probsnotaliens. That would be amazing if you could do that. Let us know if you like these sort of biography episodes.
Yeah.
Tristan, where can people find more of you?
You can go to stepbackhistory.com, and I make videos about history. I just finished filming my first shooting session since December of 2021. So I'm finally getting back on the post-baby video making train.
Yeah, you're in the post-baby. Post-baby sort of mindset. Yeah.
Post-baby, post-production.
You can find me at NerdSync. It's a YouTube channel, NERDSYNC, if you want to. I think it's probably the best YouTube channel, but that's just really what I have to say about
it. That's their saying in YouTube Weekly.
Yeah, they're publishing all about it. It's a huge hit. All of my very good videos.
To be fair, you do write all the articles in that magazine, but you know.
It's a little biased. Unlike this episode, where I was very unbiased about Eric Von Daniken the entire time. Hey, leave reviews on this on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate it, all of you who do that. It's the only way that we can really grow. It's reviews and telling your friends.
Yeah, and so until next time, the truth is out there. Probably.
That's an X-Files thing.
The truth, yeah.